Good evening and welcome to Health Matters. I'm Dr. Sanford Katz. In this Health Matters, we will be discussing senior health and fitness. Between now and 2050, the senior population in the U.S. is expected to considerably increase. Medical advances and greater access to health care are helping seniors to live longer. Becoming proactive about their health can help seniors live more fulfilling lives. Right now, a 65-year-old man, on average, can expect to live another 18 years, while the same-aged woman can expect to live another 20 years to the age of 85. Unfortunately, too many seniors spend those years in poor health, with diminished quality of life. Consequently, many older adults' plans for retirement are not fully realized due to unexpected health problems. Today, we are joined by three professionals who work to promote senior health and wellness and assist them in their golden years. My guests this evening are Dr. Robert Savory with Family Medicine and Geriatric Center, part of the Willis-Knighton Health System here in Shreveport, Tamara Crane, Director of Bossier Council on Aging, and Holly Sanders, the Senior Wellness Coordinator at the Oaks of Louisiana in Shreveport. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I wanted to get started a little bit this evening with kind of a focus initially on the medical aspects of aging and specific health issues that affect seniors. But of course, we are also going to talk very much about the programs that are available in our community for seniors, particularly those who need assistance or those who are looking for a more active lifestyle. And then we're also going to talk a bit about specifically health and fitness and diet and exercise and things of that sort.
Sounds good.
So to start off, Dr. Savory, in addition to being the director of the hospice in Shreveport, I understand, amongst other affiliations, you are also a member of the American Geriatric Association. You care for a large geriatric population. You visit nursing homes throughout the Shreveport-Bossier area where you care for patients, and have been very involved throughout your career with this population.
That is correct.
So, just for the benefit of our listeners, can you distinguish between the terms senior citizen and elderly?
The senior citizen, kind of by definition, used to be about the 65 years and on above. That has kind of changed now because we have more people that are above 65 that are very active, well into their 70s. So the old 65 is probably more up around the 72 to 75 as far as activities. As far as definition of elderly, that might be an individual that might be handicapped or in a facility that would require more care and help to keep them going.
So would you say that elderly is more of a functional status for a senior person, whereas just senior is a more generalized term?
I would think it would be more functional because we have people that are in their 90s that are still functional.
Okay, very good. Now, I forgot to mention at the beginning of the show that, once again, this is a live show. It's a call-in show, and it's a community show, meaning that we welcome your calls with questions or comments for our panel, and that number is 1-800-552-8502. So, Dr. Savory, in this population, whether it be seniors or elderly, what are the most prevalent medical conditions that you see?
Probably the most prevalent ones that we're seeing more and more is diabetes, hypertension, cardiac disease, obesity, even in some of the older people. We're seeing problems with vision, falls, which lead to fractures, which can lead to multiple additional problems besides what they already have.
And my understanding is, of the ones that you mentioned, that the leading cause of death in persons age 65 or over are actually heart disease, cancer, and pulmonary disease.
That's correct.
So to what extent can a person reduce their risk of developing these conditions?
Main thing is stay active and stay healthy. Avoid the smoking. Monitor their weight. Follow up with their physicians on their annual exams, obtain their vaccinations like they should on a yearly basis, of course keep up with their medications, and just continue to be as active as they can.
So to what extent does lifestyle play a role in the development of these conditions and in managing these conditions versus genetics?
Lifestyle plays a big part. You can start, as far as following a decent lifestyle even when they're young, and which is what we all should. Now, we all have things in our genetic makeup that we cannot change, elevated cholesterol, for example. But we can try to follow up with diet, use the medications, keep the weight down, stay active, and modify that risk as best as we can.
I see. And you mentioned smoking.
That's correct.
Smoking being obviously an important risk factor for a number of these things. So, I was in preparing for the show, I was looking at a number of government statistics and came across something from the Centers for Disease Control that listed the impact of some of these conditions that you mentioned, as well as some others, on the ability of a senior to perform what's called the activities of daily living. Could you describe what those are?
Activities of daily living are what we all do and really take just for advantage. This is eating, being able to take care of ourselves, hygiene, dressing, walking, the ability to get up and do simple tasks throughout the day.
And interestingly, there's some baseline difficulty that people have just as they age in terms of performing these things. And different different conditions seem to have a major impact. As a cancer doctor, I know that cancer has a major impact in people being able to perform these ADLs. But you mentioned broken hip. I was really surprised how much that impairs somebody. Arthritis is also one. Diabetes, you mentioned. Lots of problems. What exactly is such, what seems to be the problem with diabetes? How does that affect your ability to perform daily activities?
Diabetes affects the overall body. It affects the circulation, the cardiac system, affects the neurologic system. People have tendency to have decreased sensation in their feet and legs, vascular problems that may eventually lead to amputations of the lower extremities. These are people that are more prone to have heart attacks and high blood pressure and strokes. So diabetes is just a underlying disease that can affect multiple systems.
I see. So you mentioned heart disease and stroke, also major, major obstacles to activities of daily living. And in many cases, it seems to double or triple the number of people or the percentages of people in this age group in terms of their ability to perform these activities. So this is what they mean by golden years not being so golden, I suppose.
That's true.
So. Tamara, now you are the director of the Bossier Council on Aging, is that correct?
Correct, yes, sir.
Okay, so, we talk about these ADLs, and obviously for a number of reasons, people may have difficulty, whether it be because of health problems or even degenerative cognitive problems, neurologic problems. We didn't mention, but, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, things like that. So you probably deal with people and families for whom ADLs are a problem. What sort of services are there for people who actually have difficulty performing activities by themselves?
Well, when you begin to look at a senior who is having difficulties with activities of daily living, usually a family member, kind of like you just indicated, may be helping them with some of those things. They may also look to outsource resources. The Council on Aging is definitely one. We do have a caregiver as well as housekeeping support. And sometimes there's private agencies that they may utilize to try to help with that. But I do think it's very interesting. Dr. Savory said, you got to stay active. And it's the same, mentality of with cognitive issues. Use it or lose it. You hear that quite often. And the same thing applies to our body. You have to use it or unfortunately things will diminish. And that's one thing at the council we offer too. We offer lots of exercise programs that can help people, the seniors, stay active. But as far as with activities of daily living, we do have homemaker caregiver support. And we make a lot of referrals to other agencies when this it's outside of what we can support.
Okay, well, that sounds great. But obviously, it sounds like the best thing would be to try to preserve your function to the extent that you can for as long as you can.
Keeping them independent, yes.
So when we're talking about aging, Dr. Savory, is it true that women seem to age better than men, or is that a fallacy? Do you find that there's a difference generally?
Generally, the women do live longer and age better. That's probably because of the way a lot of the men live. However, a lot of the women are now, now taking over a lot of the tasks that men have done in the past. They're also subject to the risks and the problems that the males have been over the years. So they also are more at risk of maybe not living as long as they could. But the whole thing does go back to, like Tamara said, activity, staying active both mentally and physically.
Now, to what extent do women utilize medical services, including preventative health, relative to the men?
Probably in a better way and more so than us men.
Do you think that that has something to do with their longevity relative to the men?
That could possibly be so. Also, it seems like males have more of the genetic problems with the heart disease, but the women are catching up with that, as well as with the smoking and the lung cancer and the pulmonary problems as well.
I see. So why should seniors be proactive in maintaining their health care before they have a problem, as opposed to just, hey, once I get the problem, then I'll take care of it?
Medication now is the proactive preventive medicine, not after it has occurred, then you try to treat it. We try to prevent things from occurring. Of course, it prolongs our life. It gives us a better lifestyle, and we're able to stay more active.
Okay, so now I guess preventative medicine and screening is a big part of what you do.
That's correct.
So you did mention a cardiovascular disease. So my understanding is that it's very prevalent. One of those CDC statistics I found was that men aged 65 to 74 had a prevalence of about 63% as far as heart disease is concerned, specifically hypertension, and it's even higher as you get over the age of 75. The same is true for women, roughly, this interestingly, the same. I was surprised to see that. Now, in what cases would you recommend, let's say, aspirin for this population as a preventative treatment?
Aspirin, the 81 milligram aspirin is, and the coated aspirin, is a very good treatment to try to help decrease some of the clotting problems and improve some of the circulation in the smaller capillaries. Of course, you would have to be sure and follow up with your physician and make sure it doesn't interfere with some of the other medications that you are on.
Very good. And what about cholesterol and some of these statins, these cholesterol-lowering medications? Is that something you frequently recommend in this population?
We do. People that have had cardiac disease or coronary artery disease, the statins are a very important part of their treatment. Try to help slow down the progression of the vascular disease, and in some cases it might even decrease some of the plaque size.
I see. So you mentioned earlier smoking and obesity and recommended exercise. So what role does exercise and diet and smoking play, smoking modification or cessation? How much of a role does that play in your prescription for the treatment of cardiovascular disease or prevention of cardiovascular disease?
Whenever we talk or counsel a patient that has had cardiac disease and problems, we, as well as the cardiologist, make sure that they understand it's very important to take their medications. It's very important to get their weight down. It's very important, if they do smoke, to stop smoking, and to, again, remain active and follow up on their physician visits.
Okay, so part of this exercise that you mentioned is done, I know, in conjunction with other doctors you mentioned. But my familiarity with the Willis-Knighton system here in Shreveport is that they also have a number of classes and supervised exercise for the older population, for seniors. And
That's right.
Holly, I believe that you have a lot of experience. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yes, we do. We offer classes for all ages, but a lot of great senior-specific classes. Chair yoga is a really popular class. It's a great place to start. Kind of lowers their blood pressure, their resting heart rate, anxiety, stress, which is a source of a lot of health issues.
And what about for people who've had, let's say, a stroke or a heart attack, who are now looking to embark not only in rehabilitation but perhaps a healthier lifestyle, but they might be a little concerned about their ability to participate in these activities, or even the safety of participating in these activities. Are these classes, are they supervised? Are there medical professionals involved with this?
There are. We have certified exercise specialists there in the fitness centers, and we also have a cardiac rehab department right there on site at most of the facilities. So they have a lot of eyes on them when they work out, and safety is our first concern there.
Okay. One thing I've noticed at the Wolves-Knighton facilities is that seemingly after the exercise is over, there's like a congregation of seniors who kind of hang out and drink coffee.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
sometimes they bring in food and lunch and cake and things like that. So it seems right. like there's a real social aspect to it.
Well, we discourage the cake, but yeah. We do try to promote and target all the seven dimensions of wellness, and socialization being part of that. It's really important for the residents, or, well, I'm at the Oaks a lot, so the residents there, but our senior members to come and have connections with other people. That's just equally as important as their physical health.
So the seven dimensions of wellness, can you say a little bit more about that, please?
Sure. I'll just touch on all of them. There's physical, social, emotional, spiritual, intellectual, occupational, and environmental. And we do try to target all of those. Spend a lot of time at the Oaks of Louisiana, and so that's where we really have great opportunities to work with them on those dimensions. So obviously physical, what we've been talking about, improving our physical health, exercise, diet, stretching, yoga, stress reduction. We offer classes at the Wolves-Knighton Fitness Centers for all of that. We do some meditation with our yoga. And at the Oaks, we do a lot of classes for their Tai Chi. So both places offer a lot of that. The social aspect we talked about, that coffee pot is really popular.
Very popular.
Lots of friends there. Emotional is kind of there with the same thing in the fitness centers. Spiritual, of course, we're a fitness center at Wolves-Knighton, so we don't touch on that as much. But at the Oaks, we have a chapel and a chapel in the air, and we do a lot of activities around spiritual things.
Sure.
Intellectual, one of my favorite classes is brain fitness. So we do a weekly class where we just go over different activities that are a lot of fun. It's a lot of games and just activities for the residents to have fun with, and it improves their memory. Lots of memory games. Occupational, we try to just volunteer and do different things for the community at the Oaks. And then environmental, we have walking paths. I keep going back to the Oaks because that's where we really target the seven dimensions with our seniors.
Now, the Oaks, you mentioned, it's a residential community, is that correct?
It is. It's a senior community. We start with independent living and go to assisted living and then skilled nursing.
I see. Now, we're talking about Wolves-Knighton a lot, but there are other organizations and facilities in town that offer many of these same programs.
Sure.
I'm familiar with the Krista Schumpert System, which also has their own health and wellness program, and as well as some other nonprofit organizations like the YMCA. I know they have theirs. Are there other organizations or facilities that, let's say, somebody who's not a resident of the Oaks or other facility that they might have access to?
Yeah, well, I mean, the fitness centers offer a lot of that, and it sounds like Tamara has a lot of opportunities there.
Definitely. The Council on Aging, and in Shreveport, if you live in Caddo, the Spar Parks often will have different things like that. And, you know, kind of feeding off what Holly was just saying, though, it's about the whole picture. It's very a holistic approach. And when you're looking at seniors, you know, it's not about just somebody trying to go in and get, like, you know, a fast workout. You know, they really want the environment. They want the fellowship side of it. They really take that whole picture in and make it it's an hour and a half long investment of their day. So they really jump in there and enjoy it.
Okay, so sounds like there's a lot of opportunity for preventative medicine here in terms of lifestyle.
Correct.
Physical fitness. I came across a pretty interesting statistic as well as a study which looked at, well, first off, I forgot to mention, did you know that it was National Senior Health and Fitness Day on May 31st?
Yeah.
It was. Apparently around the country there are all these different activities. But one study that I saw published in the Journal of the American Medical Association in 2011 was that walking speed predicted life expectancy in older adults. How about that? So the faster you can walk, the longer supposedly you'll live. And I guess this is more, you know, this is on a general basis. You know, that's not to say some fast walkers can't have, you know, early demise, but in general, I guess that means the more active, as Dr. Savory was saying, the more active you are, the longer you're likely to live. Anyway, this has been confirmed in some other studies too. So it's not just, you know, one study. So activity is obviously really important, and it sounds like we have a lot of opportunities and places where people can do that. My own patients who don't have access to these organizations or may feel as though they don't have the money to join a fitness facility, I usually recommend mall walking during the summer.
Great, yeah.
You know, and I don't know if that's considered loitering, if I can promote loitering.
So.
But just, you know, it's air conditioned. It's a relatively safe and supervised place. And anyway, so that's a really important aspect of preventative health.
And on that note, we do offer classes at the Oaks for the community called HealthWise. So you can look at that in the paper.
Fantastic.
Advertisements.
Now, the other thing you mentioned, you touched on, Dr. Savory, was smoking cessation. Smoking is unfortunately very prevalent. What's your strategy for helping people stop smoking?
First of all, the individual has to want to stop smoking. We can help by using medications to a degree, but it's pretty much about 60 to 70% sheer determination with medications, support from their family, their friends, the people around them. They have to kind of pick a day when they're going to stop. Get rid of the cigarettes, get rid of the lighters, do not smoke in their house, their car, ask their friends to support them and not smoke around them, and be persistent. It does take time, and it's a very difficult thing to do. It's almost harder to get off of the cigarettes than it is alcohol. Once they do that, I encourage them never go back smoking again, or they will be back pack a day again if they aren't careful.
Yeah.
And it really is, a deterioration to their pulmonary status and their health.
Yeah. Well, certainly as a cancer doctor, it's something that I see, and it's
true.
It's, you know, I do a lot of I treat a lot of cancers of the upper air digestive tract, the esophagus, the head and neck,
right.
And the lung, and you know, the smoking is really it's awful. And it's very hard to get these folks, even after they have a cancer diagnosis and they've been treated. You'd be surprised how many people continue to smoke.
They still smoke. Many of them do.
You mentioned alcohol. How commonly do you see people in your practice, older population, where alcohol is a problem?
Alcohol is a problem, but many times it's a hidden problem. The patient themselves may not bring it up. A spouse or a family member may bring it up in confidentiality or privacy. There are screens or questions that you can ask an individual to kind of get some idea, but many times they kind of fudge on the actual amount that they really are drinking and how much alcohol they're really using. Of course, if they're still attempting to drive, that could be a very bad problem with the drinking and driving. Alcohol many times cuts down on their appetite. They don't eat well. They become malnourished and have problems there. Alcohol doesn't mix well with a lot of the medications. Many times that leads to slips and falls and, again, fractures. If they binge drink, if they drink heavily and stop suddenly, they may have seizures and other neurologic problems withdrawing from alcohol. So there are a lot of individuals, and many times it may be widows or people that are single. Depression usually goes along with the alcohol problems, and these are things that we as physicians have to kind of watch for, but we need help from the family and from the family members that know that person that's around them every day.
Yeah, and you mentioned widows, and you said it's a hidden problem, and I suppose that if you are a widow and you live alone, or widower, and live alone, that people may not realize that you have some difficulties with this.
And that's very true. And this is where it's really important many times for a family member to come in with some of the geriatric patients or the older people. We may get a better picture of what's going on from a son or daughter who watches them and is around them a lot and knows exactly what's going on. And then they can give us more of what really is happening.
I see. I want to remind our listeners to please feel free to call in with a question or a comment for any member here of our panel. The number again is 1-800-552-8502. And I know we have a large number of listeners in this particular demographic. I don't know if it was, I think we may after this follow into classical music, I'm not certain. So maybe a little later in the program, we'll pick up a few more listeners. But we do welcome your call. Dr. Saver, you mentioned slip and fall. And I was impressed by how much of an impact slip and fall has on somebody's not only their functional status, but then ultimately the remainder of their life. It can result in some chronic problems with mobility, and then from there, then they develop these other issues that you mentioned: obesity, pulmonary problems, all these other issues. And I've started referring patients sometimes for vestibular rehab or for rehabilitation for those who are relatively immobile and have difficulty with their balance.
That's right.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, sir. A lot of times the ear, nose, and throat physicians have helped us with some of the vestibular rehab, and it's very important that we try to keep people as steady on their feet as possible. The vestibular problem mixed with some of the neuropathy or some of the numbness in the legs and feet that a lot of people have, imbalance and problems associated with vision, all of this is a bad mixture. And a lot of times they may trip on something, they may not see something. Just standing up, many times they'll get a little vertigo or dizziness and fall.
Now, Holly, you have experience teaching exercise classes, I understand.
Yes.
I know yoga is one of them.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about what specific classes or exercises might be good to help people prevent slips and falls?
Sure. Well, our senior members, my top priority when I'm teaching and working with them is balance. If you can have good balance, you can prevent falls, because falls, as we know, snowball into, just like you were talking about, bigger problems. So if we can prevent that fall to begin with, we're good. So we try to strength train a lot to strengthen their bones. If we do have a fall, we're less likely to have fractures. So that's, you know, one of our goals. Our first defense, though, like you're talking about, is balance. So we do a lot of exercises where, like Dr. Saver was talking about, your vision affects your balance. So we try to work on balance with our eyes open, with our eyes closed. Just stand up with your feet together, straight, tall. Make sure you have something to hold on to so you don't fall. Close your eyes. And that alone is a balance exercise, especially for a beginner. When you're doing dishes, stand at the sink, lift one leg, and try to do maybe wash your dishes with one leg and then switch legs when you dry them. Or put them in the dishwasher. But those type of exercises are going to prevent falls, and they strengthen those accessory muscles that help you catch yourself quicker if you go to fall. And then again, if you fall, you've got the stronger bones from working on the strength exercises to prevent the fracture. So, you know, one thing leads to another. We're all connected. So the balance-specific classes I recommend, but yes, yoga, every posture in yoga is about balance. So I highly recommend a yoga class.
Now, what about if a senior has, you know, decreasing mobility for various reasons, and their home environment, whether it be they live in a multi-level home, their bedroom is upstairs, or whatever it is about their home puts them at risk for slip and fall, particularly if they live alone. How would someone be able to assess that? Is that something that, primary care would have to assess, or if they reach out to, let's say, the Council on Aging, where they might come out for some reason and be able to assess that? How would this get picked up before somebody had a slip and fall?
Well, one thing at the Council on Aging, we do assess all clients that come in, and our criteria is very much different than someone living in a facility of sorts. Our seniors that we serve are living independently. Maybe they live with a child, or they live independently, and that's their goal, is they want to stay there. And I think that's one of the main discussion points today, is how do we help seniors remain independent and healthy? One thing I'm already feeling and seeing is, you know, a healthy body is easier to and quicker to recover from any issues or injuries or falls, that kind of thing, and helping those seniors stay in that place. So we do. We assess. When we go out into a senior's home, we're looking at their home, their environment, what exactly are they needing support for, as well as the council can't always do everything. Sometimes we do make a referral maybe to a home health agency where they can come in and help a senior. Maybe they do have more services that they need, like true therapy, in-home therapies. Now, at the council, if they're able to leave their home, we have a huge regime. We have chair aerobics. We have water aerobics starting next week. We have Zumba. We have line dance. We have exercise equipment in all of our facilities. And going back to your walking, I'm going to use your statistics. We have a Walk with Ease class that's written by the Arthritis Foundation. And that's one of the things we promote is just walking, because just getting that body moving, it's something we do every day and we don't think of it as exercise. But when you truly put it into a walking program, it helps with balance. It helps with all those underlying issues as well. So, yeah, we work with all of that.
And what if somebody doesn't drive? And so transportation is a problem, and they want to attend these various programs, go to these facilities, but they're just not able to. Is there anything available to them to assist them?
Most definitely. Within Bossier Council, now, one thing I want to say is that every parish has a council on aging. I know our listening audience with Red River Radio reaches out to a large area, but every parish has a council. So I definitely want to tell people, no matter where you're listening at, if you're dealing with a senior issue, reach out to your local council. Just whatever parish you're in, Webster, Bossier, Caddo, just think of your local council. But in Bossier, we do. We offer transportation. We even have all of our vans are wheelchair handicap accessible, so even some of our walkers, some of our seniors feel more comfortable going up the lift than going up the steps. And we do, we pick them up in Bossier City, we pick up in the Benton area, and we also pick up in the Plain Dealing area and bring them to our local sites.
It sounds like pool aerobics may be particularly good for somebody who may be wheelchair bound or limited to a walker. Is that true?
Yes, we actually would. It's in conjunction, it's at the Fort Smith Pool, and Bossier City Parks and Recreation helps us with that, and they provide lifeguards. And they actually have a wheelchair lift. So we were super honored a couple years ago. We had a gentleman who was a veteran and had lost a leg. And he was able to get into water aerobics. He was the only man out of a class of like 10 women. So he was very much doted on. But he very much enjoyed it and used the wheelchair lift every day to get in and out of the pool. So, yeah.
That's excellent. Now, you did mention transportation. Is transportation available for other things as well? Let's say doctor's visits?
We do. We also do medical transportation. And medical transportation, we go anywhere in Bossier Parish as well as Shreveport, because a lot of our seniors do utilize physicians or hospital services or even dialysis that are in the Shreveport area. So we also do that.
Okay. So it sounds like if you're motivated to attend these activities, go to these facilities, or even go to your doctor, it sounds like there's a lot of assistance in the community to help you to do those things.
That's definitely what we want to try to do, because again, everything the council does is trying to help seniors remain independent in their home with the proper supports and services. And sometimes that disconnect is maybe that not having the ride to the doctor or the ride to the pharmacy to get the medicine. Like Dr. Saver indicated, it's not always the medicine once something has happened, it's the medicine prior to be proactive. So we do that. We do pharmacy, Walmart, Super One. Benton goes to the Walmart and Super One. So just getting them to those places where they can actually access the resources, where they can stay healthy and stay in their homes.
Okay. So we're talking about preventative health. I want to move, you mentioned earlier, Dr. Savory, about immunizations. In terms of it being a preventative health measure. Can you talk a little bit about the, in general, what specific immunizations you recommend and maybe what are which ones are particularly important in the senior population?
Yes, sir. Of course, our flu vaccinations on a yearly basis are very important. But nowadays, the pneumonia vaccinations, which decreases the risk of community-acquired pneumonia, is also very important. That consists of about two vaccinations about a year apart, and that takes care of the individual the rest of his life. The Zoster Vax for the shingles vaccination is very important. Any of our listeners that have had shingles would agree it's a very long, painful type of disease, and if we can decrease the risk of that occurring, then it's well worth it. Vaccinations can be, of course, obtained at the physician's offices. Many of the shingle vaccinations are given by the pharmacies around town. Since it is a live virus, The patient may be a little more limited if they're on immunosuppressives, if they're being treated for cancer problems, if they've had organ transplants and they're on immunosuppressives. That may not be a vaccination for them, so they need to be sure and check with their physician before they do get some.
And some of the arthritis medicines now are immunosuppressants.
That's very true. And if many of those people are on arthritis medicine, usually they need to check with their rheumatologist.
Okay, we actually have a caller who called in with a comment. And this caller said that he bought a vibration machine for his father so he could stand on it, and it vibrates his muscles. And this apparently helped his father with flexibility and range of motion. He recommended it to some other people. They also had a good experience, apparently. And he was wondering if, for those who have difficulty working out in other ways, if this is something that might be beneficial. Do any of you have any experience with the vibrating machines?
We have seen it. Ironically enough, we wrote a grant to Willis-Knighton to try to get one because some of our seniors have used them in some therapy settings and really like it. It's very different. It does work on some of your core muscles because you can either stand and it basically vibrates and everything works on balance. You can kind of bend a little bit and it kind of works on that core. It's an easy, as one of my seniors told me, it's an easy workout because you stand on it for about 5 to 7 minutes and it kind of works the balance, works your muscles a little bit, works your core. So it's kind of fun, but it's a little different.
We should maybe get them for the seats in the studio
and
kind of do a little experiment and see. But, you know, it's interesting also the limitations that that seniors typically have as they age. Apparently stooping, crouching, and kneeling is a very difficult thing for seniors to do, as well as carrying things. We mentioned walking, getting in and out of bed, up and down stairs, extending their arms above their shoulders. I imagine that these are all things that can get better with exercise oftentimes, unless there's some other issue, such as maybe severe arthritis or something, that these are all things that potentially can improve.
Yes, we teach a class at the Oaks called Floor Freedom, where we teach our residents how to safely get down on the floor and safely come back up. And if they've fallen, how to get into a safe position to get back up off the floor. So I think it's important that people, as we age, we learn the proper body mechanics and getting up off the floor and back down.
Okay, so with that falling and can't getting up, that brings us to the obvious question that people always ask. Do I need an emergency button? Do I need like a First Alert or some other? I don't want to just plug that particular company, but I know there is a number of companies that they sell this device that I guess transmit to an emergency number and you can get assistance. Dr. Savory, is that something that you recommend, and in what circumstances?
That's something that we always recommend. As Tamara and Holly said, our main goal is to try to keep people at home as long as we possibly can. And that is something that they can have that will allow them to remain there as long as they wear it. And it's not on the desk in the bedroom and they're in the kitchen or somewhere else, but they have to wear it. If they do fall or have problems, they can push that button and get help there immediately. That allows the other family members to feel more comfortable that they do have some way to obtain emergency help if necessary. And we've had people that have stayed in their home a lot longer just by suggesting the emergency button.
So it extends their functional independent period.
Very much so.
What other things become obstacles to people staying in their home, their own home alone?
Holly mentioned stairs, second floors, and there are devices now that people can come in and working through Council on Aging, home health, where they can have kind of escalators or lifts installed. Many times people can move a bedroom or one of the rooms downstairs into another room where they don't even really have to go upstairs. Stairs going in and out of the house, ramps can be built very easily. Lighting, improving lighting so people do not trip over carpet edges. Try to avoid having extension cords across the floor, even painting like yellow stripes on the edge of stairs so that the or steps so that the individual that has poor vision will be able to see that in dim lighting.
Getting rid of that pretty rug that's on the floor.
That's right, and watching the small pets. A lot of people that have tripped over their small dogs. So that's also true.
See, and what about cognitive issues that you encounter in your practice? At what point does that become problematic to independent living? And is there anything people can do? I know that exercise is one thing that helps to preserve a cognitive function, and but the reality is, of course, that as some people age, their cognition declines. At what point does independent living become problematic?
If it's an endangerment to the individual or the family, such as the house on fire if they try to cook, if the family members cannot take care of the individual at home, the caretaker many times will become a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week, or 7-day-a-week nurse, and that is very difficult on the family members. So you have some limitations as far as the caregiver, how long he or she can emotionally and financially and physically be able to do that. You may have a caretaker who has a disease themselves, and that would limit what they can do for the person that has the cognitive problem. People age at different rates. We have some people that are very physical and very strong and have a very bad cognitive or mental situation, and those are kind of difficult to handle. Then we have other people that you know, may not be as strong, and they're as sharp as a tack. So it does depend on each individual and what we can do for them, as well as their other diseases involved with the cognitive problem.
Okay. We want to encourage our listeners to call in once again with calls or comments to 1-800-552-8502. So, Holly, I know you're very familiar with the Oaks here in Shreveport. What are some of the different types of living arrangements that seniors may explore at different points in their, I guess, the varying abilities? What are the ranges as far as, I know obviously independent living is ideal, but when that's no longer possible, what are the different options available?
Well, like you said, independent living, it's after working here and meeting the residents and learning about aging, I recommend that people move into these facilities, and it's a fancy apartment complex is all it is when you first move in there in independent living. And from there, you get to know the staff, the other residents, and we created a community. We're close, we're family and friends there. And so when you start to notice maybe you're starting to be a little forgetful or having some things where you could use a little assistance, we have the Savannah building where it's assisted living. They're pretty independent, but they may need help with a few things around the home, and that's where they can go from there. And then also we've got the skilled nursing and the health center if they need more care. We've got the 24-hour nursing care there. So it's a continuum of care. We offer every stage of life from 55 and up.
Okay. Once again, getting back to one thing they said earlier, Dr. Saver, you mentioned some side effects from medications.
Yes, sir.
My experience is that sometimes patients have a difficult time keeping track of their medications. Some of the prescriptions require a person to take it 3 times a day, which can be sometimes difficult for any age, let alone somebody who might be experiencing some cognitive decline. And then I'm always impressed by the number of medications that I see patients on. I mean, sometimes it's well over a dozen, and it can be even more than that. And I always, you know, I know medications often have side effects in addition to them being important in treating disease. But then I also worry and wonder about the interactions between these medications and to what degree some medications are being used to treat the side effects of another medication. So could you speak a little bit to what your experience is to this issue? I guess it's known as polypharmacy.
That's correct. And that's something that you and I as physicians are always looking at the patient, looking at what medications do we really need to have this person on this medicine. And unfortunately, we have one medicine that we have to treat side effects of that medication, and that second medicine may lead to some other complication or problem. It decreases the ability to stay active. It may even decrease their cognitive ability to think, communicate, eat, stay nourished. My goal has always been the fewer medicines, the better, be it in the home or in the nursing home or any of the patients that we evaluate and treat. Every time we have patients that come in, we do reevaluate the medications. I go over it with the patient as well as the family member, and we discuss how they're doing with the medicine, and if there's some way we can either decrease the medicine or stop it, that's our goal.
That's excellent. We have two callers on the line. The first one is Buddy from Shreveport. Let's see if we can get Buddy on. Buddy, are you there? Buddy? I may have lost Buddy. Okay, we're going to, Buddy, if you please call back. We're going to try Jason from Bossier City. Jason, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Oh, welcome to Health Matters. What's your question for our guests?
Well, I've been trying to figure out how I can help my parents get out and maybe do something besides just sitting at the house all day. And I don't know what to do to help them kind of get motivated. I worry about their health declining because they'll get up for a couple hours and they'll go back to bed. And, you know,
where do they live?
Really work. They live out there towards Red Chute.
Okay. I'm going to go back to kind of what I said earlier, and definitely depending on their ability to even leave the home is maybe turn to the Council on Aging in one aspect, because the council can be a great resource to, one, just get something started, especially if someone's already in their home. Sometimes people need a little bit of support in their home to begin with. Maybe it may be just even housekeeping support, because sometimes when other issues are going on, some things start to decline a little bit. So maybe getting an assessment done to find out what is going on, because oftentimes, like Dr. Katz said, sometimes families don't know, and sometimes, as Dr. Savory alluded to, they're keeping things private and confidential. So getting an assessment to where somebody can come out there and maybe visit with them and letting them know what activities or what services are available. I'm also going to kind of allude to real quick to what Dr. Savory was talking about with the call button thing. Sometimes families or the seniors don't want their families to know too much about what's going on in their home, or they fearful that if I call emergency services, oh my goodness, something's going to happen. So lots of times those call buttons can even be set up where they're not going to call 911. They can call a next door neighbor even. They can call a child to then come help that person. So sometimes just giving those seniors that little comfort to help them stay independent. It's almost like that little helping hand a little bit.
And also, and to add to what Tamara said, you want to make sure that they may not have a medical problem going on. Many times depression is seen in the older population, and it's kind of what you are alluding to or talking about. So getting them in to see their primary care physician who knows them, who works with them, may help as well.
Jason, thank you very much for your call.
Thank you.
Okay. We don't have a lot of time left this evening, but I did want to get into a few screening procedures. We talked a lot about prevention, but there's also, of course, screening tests and procedures that are important in this population. Dr. Savory, what do you do for somebody at risk for osteoporosis? How do you identify these people, and what sort of treatments are available to them?
One of the most important thing, of course, is to look at bone density studies, especially in the women. If they are postmenopausal, after they've stopped having periods, from their mid-40s on up to their 50s, generally we start talking to them about getting a bone density. It's very quick. It's easy. There's no pain to it. The scan takes maybe 5-10 minutes at the most, and we get a wealth of information. If they do have osteoporosis, then we're able to go ahead and start treating them and take care of them appropriately and follow. Many times the rheumatologist will do that. A lot of times it's a referral to the radiology department, like at Willis-Knight and Piermont. We got a dedicated machine that does the bone scans. And so we can continue to follow and prevent some of the fractures if somebody should fall.
Yeah, so those falls go from slip and fall to slip, fall, and fracture if in the setting of osteoporosis more commonly, huh?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, and let's see. What about in smokers, screening for possible lung cancers?
First of all, just x-raying everybody is not necessarily a good screen. You're going to have people that have been smoking for years. It may show minimal changes in the x-rays, but many times pulmonary function tests will give you a lot of information as well. This is where we start to see people with early chronic obstructive pulmonary disease or emphysema. And if they continue to smoke, as you had suggested, then we do kind of talk to them about maybe following with a chest x-ray. If there's something abnormal, that's where we do CT scans and look a little further.
Yeah. So in my population, I see a lot of smokers, and there's a relatively new test that I've been ordering. It's called a low-dose CT scan. And basically what it is, it's a CAT scan of the chest that is used to try to screen people at risk for lung cancer so that it's caught, if it is there, in its earliest stage. And that's when it's most treatable and most likely curable. Thing about lung cancer, unfortunately, is that by the time you develop symptoms, a lot of time it's locally advanced or it's widespread.
That's
and
fine.
It's not curable. So it's usually when we discover it almost by accident that we have the best results. And that's where the screening has really been helpful. And the risk is based upon age, so age 55 to 80, but also something called 30-pack year smoking history. And what that means is basically you multiply the number of packs you smoke per day times the number of years that you've been smoking. And if that magic number is 30 or more and you're in that age group, then you may be a good candidate for this. It's also in those people who currently smoke or who have quit, but, you know, only in the last 15 years. So that's something relatively new. And I've seen in my practice, we do it on people who've had other cancers who smoke. And we've really found quite a number of cancers early on. What about mammograms, Dr. Savory? How often do you recommend those for your patients?
Mammograms generally start the initial screening mammogram at 35 and then 40 on up well into the late 60s or 70s in certain cases. And that would be on a yearly basis after the year of age of 40. Now, if somebody has breast cancer in the family, many times would recommend that they have their mammogram starting a little bit earlier, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a mother, sister, aunt, somebody that's a first-degree relative, it's very important to follow up with a mammogram and do it consistently.
How about the GYN exams, the pap smears and pelvic exams?
GYN and pap exams, they recommend starting those around 21, 22 nowadays and continuing on throughout their reproductive years. And on, we encourage our ladies even follow up with the GYN people well into their 60s,
yeah.
Depending on each individual.
And that doesn't really matter whether you've had a hysterectomy or not.
That's
as
correct.
Well. Sometimes people think, well, I had a hysterectomy, I don't have to worry about this. But in fact, that's not the case. What about people's hearing and vision? Is that something that requires routine screening?
Hearing and vision is very important, especially the vision, as we've all talked about throughout the night here, how important vision is as far as preventing falls and preventing injuries. It's very important if somebody has cataracts or some problems there to get that taken care of. It's amazing how much they can see after the cataracts are removed. Wear eye protection if they're working around something that they need the protection for, and be smart. Hearing, just as important. If you're working around loud noises throughout your life, you should have been wearing hearing protection throughout your life. Once you lose it, we can't get it back, just like the vision. It's amazing how many people lose their hearing and then get appropriate hearing devices or hearing aids, and all of a sudden they can hear their grandkids cry, they can hear the birds, they can hear a lot of things that they have been missing over the years. So yes, sir, it's very important to allow us to know what's going on around us as well as help protect us.
Now, I've purposely put off the PSA screen till the very end because it's controversial and I want to make sure we don't have too much time to discuss it at the risk of getting lots of calls from various medical specialists. So can you speak a little bit about what your perspective is and as far as the value of PSA screening and in what specific populations?
And you're right. The PSA screening has changed through the years and it is controversial. I continue to do it.
Up until what age?
Probably up until about late 60s, 70s, somewhere around there. When you start getting up into the older ages, prostate cancer is so slow growing, it's usually some other disease or other problem that will end that individual's life. I have found people that have in their 50s and 60s have had a real increase in PSA, and we found that they've had prostate cancer, and I feel comfortable at least getting them to a urologist and letting them be followed by one of the specialists. But it's still controversial.
Yeah. That's unfortunately all the time that we have this evening. I think you all have provided a slew of information, just a phenomenal amount of information. I know our listeners have found very useful, even though we got only one caller and one comment. I know that that just means people are listening intently and you know, want to hear more of what you offer and what, you know, what the experts are wanting to discuss. So, but I know that this is a topic that we could spend lots of time on, and I think we've just touched on it. But I guess the take-home message here is that, you know, as people are getting older, we want to have everyone have a good quality of life and maintain functional independence. And many of the ways that they can do that is by utilizing the services that are available either from their healthcare practitioner as well as the community services and stay active. I want to thank once again my guest this evening, Holly Sanders, a senior wellness coordinator at the Oaks and the Willis-Knighton System, Ms. Tamara Crane, who's the director of the Bossier Council on Aging, as well as Dr. Savory, who is a, amongst other things, family practice physician, geriatrician, and director of hospice, lots of different things, and lots of experience with the senior population. So thank you all for coming.
Thank you for having us.
Health Matters is a program for informational purposes only. For all health questions, you should consult a physician or health professional. The views and opinions expressed on Health Matters may not necessarily reflect those of Red River Radio, LSUS, or staff. This show is available for download from redriverradio.org. Health Matters is a production of Red River Radio. The producer is Renee Moran, with production assistance provided this evening by Wally Derleth, Al Villarreal, and Tim Snell. Support for this program comes from the Knoll Foundation and also from the Community Foundation of North Louisiana, along with a gift from Kit and Lisa Gamble. Please join us next Thursday for Health Matters. I'm Dr. Sanford Katz. Thank you for joining us this evening.